You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. A new poll by Credit.com shows that a large number of Americans are redefining the American dream.
Used to mean having that white picket fence in front of your very own house.
But now one in four Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 define the American dream as being debt-free.
Well, we want to hear from you. How do you define the American dream? What's your aspiration when it comes to money, owning things, paying off debt? Are you surprised to hear about this change? How do you think the future looks for the younger generation? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on our Facebook page at Central Time on WPR.
Connie Kilmark joins us now in studio. She's principal of Kilmark & Associates. And Connie, welcome to Central Time.
It's my pleasure.
Well, what do you make of the news that we're starting to redefine the American dream, moving from owning a house to not carrying any debt?
Well, I've been doing this work for about 30-some-odd years, and honestly, I never thought I would see this moment. Some of it, of course, is, in fact, bad news for the economy. But our economy was premised on a kind of unconditional optimism about the future that I think we've been dinged about. I think at this point, many, many Americans seeing so many people out of work or working at jobs at much lower rates of pay than they used to are finding it really difficult to trust that a debt that they make today will be reasonable, manageable to pay off tomorrow.
Is this something that we haven't seen since, say, the Depression era?
I certainly don't think we've seen it in the last 30 years. Remember how it seems longer ago, the 80s, when everything was about material possessions, where the showier, the bigger, the shoulder pads were big. Everything was about big and shiny and more and grandiose. And now I see many people defining a manageable life in terms of sustainability, in terms of local product. And debt doesn't seem to fit with all of those newly defined ways of understanding goodness.
Well, it seems like it's hard to even kind of conceive of a life without debt because so much of what we do is predicated on debt. Mortgages, car payments, student loans, and on and on. And you've got your credit score. It's all wrapped in together. I mean, how do you even conceive of a debt-free life that's long-term?
Well, I think people are beginning to be much more collectively cautious about the unfreedom that comes with debt. Sometimes it's worth it. It's worth it when the utility of the thing that you're buying on somebody else's nickel is worth a good deal to you now and worth the risk that you're taking, possibly going to improve in value like a home possibly can. But even homes, which always seemed to go up in value in the past, have now proven that they are vulnerable to the market. And as a result, people are saying, wait a minute, maybe I don't need a home. Maybe I need a place to live within which to make the human relationships, which are my home, safe and comfortable and, in fact, be more nimble as a result of that.
Are we moving from an ownership society to, a society of renters and transitional sorts of things?
I'm not sure that being a renter is the ideal so much as being nimble is the ideal. I think people are beginning to recalibrate what their understanding of time is. And I think that there may be ownership again in the future if people can accumulate a sufficient stake. That may mean that people at lower incomes are not as able because the down payment is such a significant obstacle. The accumulation of that capital at the same time that rent takes up such an amount. But I think people just feel so cautious about the nightmare that the American dream turned into for so many people. Foreclosure and being evicted and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I like how you used the word unfreedom a little while ago. It's an interesting concept when it comes to debt. We don't usually think of it as being something that steps on our freedom. You know, we think more about our freedom to buy a house or to buy a car that maybe we can't pay all for in cash. But I mean, do you think as a financial advisor, this is a good change that we're realizing that debt is sort of crippling and can, you know, get in the way of being free?
Well, not always crippling, but one should enter it with extremely cold heart and a cold view that it has to really be valuable to you because the methods by which collection can occur are often unpleasant. significant legal tools are available to a creditor for a legitimately owed debt. And we ought to know as much as they know about the nature of the entire relationship when we're involving ourselves in a significant debt, and then say it's worth it to me, an education, for instance, an investment in the self. But the level of debt for things like pizza and beer, I've been saying for years, not a good idea. Borrow the least you possibly can. Work as much as you can consistent with your achievement in college, and then get out with the smallest amount of debt possible.
Do you think a lot of what we're talking about here is downside? Do you think there's an upside that we're thinking about debt and our futures in a more careful way?
I think we are beginning to replace our access to other people's money with a deeper awareness of a web of relationships. I think we're creating across the country a bit more of an arc. An arc as in, let's get through this flood together. An arc that's made of locality, of merchants at farmers markets, of making and remembering skills that we once had long ago, the do-it-yourself sort of movement, the global warming that we see that was caused by so much convenience and so much material comfort doesn't look so good to us anymore because we want something for our children as well.
Now, we were talking about college education a little bit and how it's possible these days to leave college, grad school, what have you, and you're a young person, you're 22 years old, you're 24 years old, and you've got $70,000 in debt. I mean, one of our producers was saying a number like that when you're 22 is almost an imaginary number, but it's real when as you find out later on. What do you say to people who are young and are thinking about taking on that kind of debt or who have it?
I think it pretty much breaks my heart because it really intervenes between that young person and quite a number of possibly really great job opportunities that don't necessarily pay enough. It thwarts or deflects the course of a life that might have been spent in a different way. It may even change the majors people are choosing in school because they're choosing according to what they'll be able to make a paycheck in. And that breaks my heart. I think we've done way too much of privatizing the expense of an educated workforce.
And so somebody in that situation might say, that internship would be great for my desired career. I can't afford to live on an internship free or with low pay. Or I'd love to work for this nonprofit and change the world, but it doesn't pay enough to pay off my debt. Do you see that kind of career impact?
I think exactly that sort of thing is happening. And we've seen a tremendous flight of an enormous amount of brilliance to places like Wall Street, where the sciences, in some cases, the great quantitative minds, are not as present in some of our other fields, which pay less. So I think that the bloom is off the rose here for me. I don't know if we have the will to fund a fully educated workforce to be competitive with countries that are, in fact, ready, willing, and able to do just exactly that.
Well, another statistic out of this poll that's kind of surprising is that 27.9 people surveyed said they define the American dream as being able to retire at age 65. And do you think that's something people are able to achieve, given the economic times that we're living in right now?
For about 10 years, I've been indicating to folks that are so not ready for retirement and so not aware of how much it's going to cost in terms of their savings, call on their savings. I've been saying that one of the most important assets that they can still cultivate in their late 40s and 50s is their physical health. Because if one is going to work longer, then your capacity to get up in a healthy manner and go to work is an asset for retirement. So I think that many people in the baby boom generation are finding out kind of the hard way that they'll be working longer and at jobs that are not the same as the jobs that they may be quote-unquote retiring from simply because the cash flow that they need to just live a basic life isn't there in savings.
When I talk to people in my age range and a little older, a little younger, we'll say something like, yeah, when I retire at age 65, and then everybody kind of chuckles ironically. Is there a sort of a fatalism almost, a sense that, yeah, we're all kind of, well, I can't use that word. in a poor position, I'll say.
Well, let's be sensible here. When retirement, which was a phenomenon for maybe one or two generations in the United States, was kind of invented, it came about as a result of bodies breaking down in things like mines and other very heavily physical work. We're living longer by a lot. And as a result, the percentage of your lived life that you actually are earning, it may be impossible with 30 years in the workforce to finance another 30 years simply not working at all. So I think you might want to think about retirement as three phases, the first being when you're still capable but may want to gear down a little bit, but you're still working. Then the next phase, maybe in your 70s, when you're a little bit more frail but maybe working even less or not at all. But then very, very much later, many people living into their 80s and 90s not able to work. So I say work as long as you can.
Well, we're talking right now to Connie Kilmark, principal of Kilmark & Associates, about changing definitions of the American dream. It used to be that the American dream meant you could afford a house, picket fence, dog, that kind of thing. And now a lot of younger people are saying the American dream means getting rid of your debt, and that's a change.
Well, how do you define the American dream? What do you aspire to, best case or the best you can make of it? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think about the role of debt in your life? Does it make you anxious? 800-642-1234 or send us an email, talk@WPR.org.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking now with Connie Kilmark, who's here in the studio. She's the principal of Kilmark & Associates. And we're talking about the changing definition of the American dream. It used to be that people thought that the thing to do was to buy a house, and that meant you made it. Now being debt-free is a new signifier of the American dream.
Does that sound like you? Call us at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Does debt have a huge role in your life? You can also comment on the Central Time Facebook page. That's Central Time on WPR.
And let's take a phone call now. We've got Linda on the line with us from Ashland. Hi, Linda.
Yes. I like to comment on what they were saying about people not being able to own their own homes and houses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, back then, when I was starting out, we used to have to save 20% down when we bought a piece of property, and then the interest back in the Carter administration was like 22%. So if you wanted something, you needed to save it. You didn't need to go out and have everything new. You learned to buy used things. You learned to go to the Goodwills. You learned to be thrifty on what money you make.
Right. And Linda talking there about how, you know, it got really easy to buy homes for a lot of people, and it made savings not quite as necessary for a while.
Well, I think people need to retrieve the wisdom of our elders that you should take the measure of the sort of binding of the future that you're about to do, and that you should be fairly ready for that risk. And saving, having a cushion, is invariably an excellent idea. The people who are coming through this difficult economy are the people that have significant cash reserves, because it will cushion the road in front of you, and especially when you own a home.
Before we get back to the phones, Connie, I wanted to ask you about anxiety surrounding debt and the worry of not having that cushion, not having that financial slack. Do you see that in clients and in the country in general?
I see it in the country in general, and partly it's part of the human condition, because we all can not only remember the past, but we try to foresee the future, and we worry about the future because it's an essentially unknowable thing. So when you make a contract with a lender for a certain amount of debt, you're binding a portion of your future earnings, which you then say, as you look around yourself at the unemployment situation, you say, well, what if I lose my job? What if I can't pay this back? So the anxiety around debt is precisely the anxiety around job security, around the capacity to continue to earn, which is now less secure than it might have been in the 70s and 80s when if you made a commitment to a company, the company was going to be there and your job was likely to be there, at least in the middle classes.
Now we've got a comment here on the Facebook page. Becky says, I'm in my early 30s and my idea of the American dream would definitely to be debt-free, which I am, except for a home mortgage. It's something I've been thinking a lot about lately, the idea of a tiny house, living minimally, having less stuff. Do you think that's a trend? People, even with home buying, want to, you know, make things small scale and more manageable.
I think it is a trend. And I think that for a while, you had to explain yourself if you owned a small house, because people would say, well, I know your career and certainly you could be moving on up. I think now quite the opposite is true in certain age brackets, where you almost have to explain yourself if you're moving to a bigger house. The idea of small, sustainable, global warming, modest debt, small and less stuff, that they're all converging into a kind of a norm, a new normal that people are experiencing, and not to the people's material ill. I think people are just fine in this smaller scale life.
Back to the phones now. We have Peggy with us in Winona, Minnesota. Peggy, hi. You're on the air.
Hello. I would just like to say my husband and I have no debt. We own no credit cards. Our house is paid for. We used to watch all our friends have a lot of fun, go to Hawaii, buy the big cars. I thought quite possibly we were the dullest people around. However, when the economic downturn came, a lot of our friends in construction lost their jobs, and consequently they lost their homes. They lost their cars. So I still think we're pretty dull, but I can't sleep well at night.
Thanks, Peggy. Well, Peggy is the aunt, and her neighbors were the grasshoppers, I guess, in this story.
Well, there's a certain caution that it sounds like you exercised about the future, and it may not have been, you know, rocking and rolling, but it sounds like it's seeing you through nicely right now.
Does it have to be that way, though? Just being debt-free mean you can't have any fun?
I don't see any reason why we have to say we can't have any fun. That would mean that the entire rest of the planet, mostly folks that are relatively poor, are not having any fun. Have you ever heard of no fun in Africa, no festivals, festivals in Central America, no feast days and celebrations all over the world in every culture? That's where all our art and music have come from. They haven't come from shopping malls.
So maybe we need to redefine fun. Maybe
with imagination.
It's not the fancy cars. Maybe we need to do some other stuff.
Yeah, with imagination and each other.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. We've got Dino with us in Madison. Hi, Dino. Middleton. Hey, Dino.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. Just wanted to make a comment sort of antithetical to what I'm hearing. My wife and I went to graduate school, pharmacy school, so that we could provide a higher standard of living for our daughter. My intent is to raise her with a completely different generational mindset. We intend to fully subsidize and pay for her entire college education and graduate education if she chooses to. I know it's not a luxury that a lot of people have, and it's not one we could currently meet, but we plan to build that because we experienced high debt loads coming out of our education, mm-hmm. and we don't want her to be saddled with the same experience. The whole idea is to leave your generation with a position that's better than the generation coming before it, right? So,
all right. Thanks, Dino. Is Dino the exception, though, that it seems realistic that they can put the next generation in a place to be better off than they were?
Well, there's two responses I'd have. First of all, it's great that you and your spouse are in relatively high-paying and very, very stable demand jobs. We will always need pharmacists, and we'll need them, I'm hoping, we'll need them locally. So you've chosen and are capable of a nice career. The second thing I would say is it's great intentions what you would like to do for your child if you have only the one. If you have more children, it might be harder. But be careful about making sure that your child is up for, ready for, and appreciates. And sometimes that gift is, it means something different to the giver than it means to the one receiving the gift. So there's some wisdom in child rearing here that you want to take in stride and make sure that that person, that youngster, is coming along with an awareness of what she might otherwise have been able to achieve in terms of her own wisdom of living if she were paying for some of that her college education herself.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. And let's get another one in now. Tom joins us from Madison. Hi, Tom.
Hi, yes. I grew up as a the son of a union printer, and he always had a very good lifestyle, talk about vacations and cars and things like that. But then when I went into the arts, I realized that being a performer and an artist is something that actually helps you out in life. You're constantly problem solving. You're constantly reevaluating your goals and what your American dream is. And at the end of a couple of decades of doing this, I can firmly say that I've learned to live extremely well on little to no money, whereas a lot of my other friends in the market-driven world don't have those talents. And I think living well on a fixed income or on a smaller amount of money than you think you need is a life skill that's really good to develop.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom. And Connie, what do you say to that in the last minute or so?
I think a big piece of what I hear in your voice, Tom, is an attitude of plentifulness. I think that envy is the enemy of living well. I think if you're looking at people who have more than you and thinking you'd be happy if you were those people, will make anybody miserable, and you can always find somebody with more. So enjoy what you have and make beautiful things out of it and enjoy your friendships. And that's what I hear Tom doing.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tom. And Connie, thank you to you. Thank you so much for coming into the studio and talking today. Appreciate your time.
What a pleasure it's been.
We've been talking to Connie Kilmark, principal of Kilmark and Associates.